Please be seated. Call the docket for Wednesday, December 30th. Schimmel's Restaurant, United States Trustees motion to convert or dismiss. That matter has been settled. Ron McAlpin is to submit an agreed order. John Christopher Evans. We have a motion for relief from the automatic stay filed by Merchants and Planners Bank, a debtor's response, a trustee's response. That matter is going to be reset to February 19th at 9 o'clock. And James Renfro is to submit an order resetting. I believe we have two people who want to participate by telephone. And that would be you.
I certainly don't know how to turn it on.
I think it's Andy Phillips and Derek Henderson. This is Neil Olak. Who do I have on the line?
Judge, this is Andy Phillips. And Derek Henderson.
All right, thank you. Call the docket for John Christopher Evans. And the first matter that I called before I realized that someone was going to participate by phone was the motion for relief from the automatic stay filed by Merchants and Planners. The debtors responded. The trustees responded. My understanding is that's going to be reset to February 19th at 9 o'clock, and James Renfro is to submit the order resetting. The automatic stay will continue until such time as the court has ruled on the motion. Okay, next up on the docket, we have Community Bank of Mississippi's motion for relief from the automatic stay.
Your Honor, Pat McAllister for Community Bank. Mr. Henderson filed a response to that motion. As I read his response, it was not really an objection to the motion, but simply a response. He and I have agreed on the terms of an agreed order, and we'll be submitting that to the court.
Okay. Mr. Henderson?
That is correct.
All right, thank you. That matter has been settled, and Mr. McAllister is to submit an agreed order. All right. Next on the docket is a motion for a Bankruptcy Rule 2004 examination filed by Merchants and Farmers Bank. And I think everybody but me joined in it. I think every single person known to mankind has joined into this thing. Okay, so what we have is, as I understand this, is somebody wants to do a 2004 of Mississippi Valley title, and for the most part, everybody thinks that's a good idea. Okay, what's the problem?
Your Honor, may I speak?
Yes.
Jeff Rawlings on behalf of Merchants and Farmers Bank. I'm not sure what the problem is. We think that everything that we've asked for can and should be produced. We need some transparency here in the entire case through all creditors. As I understand it, the banks, about 17 banks, have produced everything that they've got or in the process of doing so. And for a variety of reasons, we want to see the same thing from Mississippi Valley Title and Old Republic.
Okay.
So.
All right, let me hear from, I'm sure there's an, Mr. Rawlings, I can't say this for certain, but I'm sure there's another side to this. I can't wait to hear that.
Well, Your Honor, I forgot to mention that. I would like you to join in.
I did feel like I was left out. I was the only one. Okay.
No, not quite,
Mr. Clark,
Judge.
Should I join in or not?
Well, actually, the ones that joined in, Judge, basically have said, if it's going to go ahead, wait and let us all do it and do it in an efficient manner and do it. And number one, I don't. I would like to say a few things. If Your Honor has looked at the request, it's really just a document request. When they get down to the relief, they're not asking for an oral exam. They're asking for a production of documents. But the types of things If I just might mention, if you have the requests, the things they're looking for, this is really, it goes way beyond the purpose or scope of a 2004 exam. They are asking us to produce things like not something relating to the property or liabilities of the estate, but here's the thing, any analysis of claims made against Mississippi Valley Title or Old Republic, claims against us relating in any way to John Christopher Evans. They also are asking for manuals, guidelines about Mississippi Valley Titles or Old Republic's procedures for dealing with things. We think it's very proprietary, but these are not what they are really looking for. Is, I think, discovery for claims on the title insurance policy. Those claims make absolutely no difference to the value of the debtor's estate or claims against it. If we paid every claim for title insurance that's been made, or if we paid none of it, there's no difference. If we pay a claim, we're going to get an assignment of the bank's rights, and we're then going to become not just a contingent claimant, which we are now, but we will become a claimant with exactly the same amount that we pay out. So it makes absolutely no difference. And if you look at their request, that's really what they're looking for. We have offered to them, for instance, we said, what do we have that we could help you with? I mean, for instance, would you like to know? They say, well, we want to know the priority of claims and all this. And we said, well, we haven't updated title search and so forth. They're not interested in that. We have updated appraisals on some of these properties. Not interested in that. What they want is manuals and procedures relating to not just the claims against Mississippi Valley Title and Old Republic, but the ways that we deal with it would be internal procedures. It's not even the way we deal with approved attorneys, who would be, in this case, the Charles Evans, not the debtor in this case. But they're looking for things like that, the way that Mississippi Valley Title or Old Republic would handle things internally. We have, as I say, we have offered them the other things. If what they're wanting... as I say, this has nothing to do with the value or liabilities of the debtor's estate. So they're really outside the purpose or the scope of an exam. Second thing is they mention documents that have been produced by the banks, and that's exactly right. Mississippi Valley Title, Old Republic have gone to a lot of trouble, have basically requested information, have gotten it from some banks. We don't have it all from Merchants and Farmers yet, but they're going to get it for us. And we've got this stuff. Well, we have not only a protective order in place in the Chancery Court, we have confidentiality orders with each of these banks. Do they want us to turn over, how in the world are we going to do this, turn over documents that one bank has said, we won't let you look at anything till you signed a confidentiality order or a confidentiality agreement and turn it over to another one? We're going to be back in here every other day dealing with that. There probably are also some privacy issues, which I think is what led the banks to, in part, to want the confidentiality agreements in the first place. The next thing, I guess, as I say, seen in the best possible light, what this request would be for, what I think would be discovery with respect to the bank's claims against the title insurance company. And that's, as I say, it's in the best light. And we've offered them certain things that we think are relevant, perhaps, that they might want, but they don't seem to want them. As I say, they're not requesting, although the title says this, when you get down to the relief, they're really just asking for production of documents, and they confirm that. But if they were requesting a 2004 exam, and if there were a legitimate information or documents that they were entitled to, would this be the way to do it in the bankruptcy proceeding? Again, I think it's plainly not a proper 2004 exam request, but here you'd have, what would you have? You'd have the, let's say you're having a 2004 exam, we're going to have this many lawyers, perhaps more, sitting around while each bank goes through perhaps dealing with the information, dealing with its claim. And again, if we could do that. And we have obtained a lot of records from these banks. I mentioned not turning those over for a variety of reasons, but, well, I've talked about that.
And as far as how the 2004 would be conducted, if there was testimony, we've already crossed that bridge when we talked about how Mr. Evans was going to be examined, and we were having one lead Mississippi Valley Title conduct the examination. Everyone was going to submit the general questions. They were going to sort of assemble those, and then each bank would be entitled to only ask those questions that specifically related to that bank's claims against Mr. Evans. So there's a way to make these 2004 exams efficient, and that's how we were going to deal with it as against Mr. Evans. So I don't think necessarily it would be a free-for-all if it was against Valley Title. There's ways of dealing with that.
I can see dealing with the debtor, but I would be interested in what in the world how in the world this affects the bankrupt's estate, how this effect affects the administration of the bankrupt's estate. I cannot see how, as I say, if we pay one claim, if we don't pay a claim, what in the world does that have to do? I think, and as I say, it's pretty clear from this, they're seeking something else, and I think it may be just a pressure to, yeah.
Would you agree with me that if Bank X could recover in full from Valley Title or Old Public, whoever it is, then their participation in this case would be quite limited. They would assign, you would have an assignment of their claim and they're out. Otherwise, they're going to be actively participating in this case to try to find a way to recover in the event there is an insurance. So whether we have 30-something banks all going after Mr. Evans or Valley Title going after Mr. Evans with a bushel basket of assignments is a very different administration of this case. Wouldn't you agree?
I could see that that would be the case if we were in some instances. But I'm wondering what, I think what we're going to have to do, though, Your Honor, is because of the way they're asking about policies, procedures, manuals. I mean, this is stuff we're not going to give, the Mississippi Valley Title is not going to just hand out to, you know, to competing title companies and their agents, and it's if they can tell us, I would like to hear somebody. They have not been able to give me any inkling of why this is a 2004 exam, what they want. They're going to have to give us a list of things beforehand, or we're going to be right back. We're not going to answer questions.
But maybe today will be that time where we can hear from Mr. Rawlings and his gang and find out what it is, you know, they're trying to get, and we can limit it today because obviously we don't need to come back again and do this all over. Let's try to figure out now how we can conduct a reasonable 2004. So, Mr. Rawlings, other than them giving you every piece of paper in their building, how can we get this to a point where we really are focused on the acts, conduct, or property or liabilities and financial condition of the debtor, or matters that affect the administration of the estate?
Well, Your Honor, being the cynic that I am, I suspect that they don't want to give us anything, and that's why we're here. Mr. Clark talked about an offer to produce documents. I haven't seen that, and I don't know that anybody else has, and no documents have been produced. If they've got anything, we'd love to see it, but we haven't seen anything.
How can we best do this? Do you want to take your request and go down from it item by item? Can we do it in groups? Is it some general principles that we could get out of the way first?
I think there are some general principles.
Okay, let's try that.
To discuss, now I know for the first time what their specific concerns are, so I can address those. He doesn't, or Old Republic and Valley don't understand how this relates to the bankruptcy process. Well, as I appreciate it, there are over $70 million in claims out there against the estates by banks and other entities. I think maybe $80 million. And based upon their own information that they filed in the state court action, I think through the amended complaint as attached as an exhibit, they showed $45 million in claims. Well, that's a $35 million shortfall. So unless they're telling us today that they're going to pay 100% of all the claims, then we're in the claims process entirely. We need to know, for instance, what did they know and when did they know it? Because let's say they pay my bank 50 cents on the dollar. Well, I've still got a $2 million claim, and I'm going to seek to have their claim subordinated to mine, if possible, if there's a basis for it. So that's very important. What they knew, when they knew it, why didn't they know it? When did they audit Charles Evans? Why didn't they audit Charles Evans? Why did they give him an agency number? Why did they award him Agent of the Year? Things like that. We've got to find out what they knew, what they didn't know, and why they didn't. This thing has been going on since September, and we don't know any more today than we knew then. Substantively, we don't have any documents. Everybody's updated title. We've all filed or are active in the bankruptcy process, but we don't know what happened yet, other than there were a bunch of bogus loans. They are way ahead of the game on us, and there's no reason for them to hide that ball. So as to proprietary confidential information, the only concern that I know of that the banks had pre-petition was the Privacy Act, redacting Social Security numbers, addresses, what have you, loan numbers. If anything, we don't want to see our documents back to us. So that kind of takes that away.
So is it, you're saying that there are no banks who want to see the other banks' claims?
Not that I'm aware of.
We have quite a few joiners here. Does anybody else want to see another bank's claims, Ms. Jim?
Your Honor, should I approach just do
that microphone's fine.
Okay. Christina Johnson for the record on behalf of four banks of record, First State Bank, State Bank and Trust Company, Bank of Forest, Holmes County Bank, actually is doing a verbal joinder today, Your Honor, if that's okay. There are competing lenders. And so to the extent that the property at issue with regard to any of my clients have competing claims pending, not only in this case, John Christopher Evans, but in any other case, as you know, your order did not consolidate the claims process. So each claim as to each debtor is going to be independently analyzed. So we're going to need to know if M&F has a claim against Town Park of Madison. This is an exact situation, Your Honor. Bank of Forest has a claim also, but it's against White Oaks. But it all deals with the same property. So there will be some of that.
Okay, and why would we need a 2004 of Mississippi Valley to figure that out?
Because they know more than we know about how that happened. And for the record, to supplement what Mr. Rawlings has said, and I'm going a little further than you probably wanted me to, we had asked informally for them to sit down with us and tell us where they were and sort of have a come-together meeting with all lenders. Everybody was invited that we knew to invite, and they have decided not to come. So part of the issue is they're not talking, and we need to know what they know. Okay. Documentary and verbal.
Your Honor, I think I've touched on every point. The last point that he raised, I think, is probably the biggest non sequitur. They allege that because of pending litigation, that this is not the appropriate vehicle. My bank's not a party to any pending litigation against them. The case law is very clear that that only relates to when the parties are seeking 2004 information from each other. And their own 2004 motions that they filed in this case against Charles Evans and John Evans specifically cite that litigation as a basis for seeking the information they want. So you can't have it both ways. And that's indicative of where they've been throughout this, I think. They want their cake. They want to eat it. We understand they're under tremendous pressure because of what's happened, as all are the banks. We just need to know what they've got. And if they're hiding it, why?
Okay. Before, I know Mr. Clark is about ready to jump out of his chair, but is anybody else on the bank side like to add anything to what Mr. Rawlings has said for the basis for, now we're going general principles, I'm sure eventually we're going to go item by item through the 2004 list, but Mr. Noble?
Doug Noble for Bank Yazoo. We filed a joinder, which Mr. Clark accurately described. I don't think that at this point we're actively seeking a lot of information from Valley Title or Old Republic on anything. We have, however, asserted a claim that is more or less in limbo now. And I would be curious if Mr. Henderson, I think this case, the state court matter we're referring to, has been removed. Is that correct? Or is it's going to be removed? Is that right? Okay. I don't know where we are in the claims process, and all of us, I think, probably have the same questions about that. Mr. Henderson's pending motions to sell are an effort to move the process along, I think, more than anything. And I think all the banks had the same questions, and I don't know that anybody here, or certainly I'm not here with the ability to say I know what I'm really looking for. But I do think Ms. Johnson's correct that Valley's probably knows more than we do because they've got more at stake than everybody else, or at least the single largest stakeholder. So from that standpoint, I think that the 2004 request is not inappropriate because I don't think we're at the point now that we know what actions we need to take and in what form those would take, and that's what a 2004 exam is for. So that was the basis for our joinder. Not merely more procedural than substantive is.
Okay. So let's see if we can get some common ground. Let's start with the basics. First, does anybody have I assume everybody would like to have from Mississippi Valley Title the properties they claim, you know, that they're insuring, the titles on which properties they're insuring. That's number one. And what their position is as far as the lien status on that property and if they have an appraisal. So I would think that those are the three things on each piece of property where there's title insurance. Everybody would want some idea of what Valley's has as far as documentation. Mr. Clark, do you have a problem with that?
No, we can go off to both of them.
Okay, so.
And no acceptance. So.
Okay, well, we'll get it resolved one way or the other today. We've got 2.5 hours to figure this out. Okay, so for each piece of property that Valley claims to hold a title policy, having issued a title policy, they will provide which property they have, what they believe is the lien status, and what they have is the appraisal. Okay, so that's number one. Mr. Rawlings, anything you'd like to?
Their lien analysis?
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. They're going to tell us, we think it's bank A is first, B is second, C is third, and it's worth X dollars. Okay, and whatever documents they have to support that, we'll have that property by property, and it'll be produced in that manner. You know, not by each property, so that people want to come look at the documents, they'll be sorted by property at 123 Main Street, wherever else you may have property. Okay.
The cure actions relating to that same dirt that have been initiated by Valley Title or Old Republic through the names of the insurers. There's been numerous cure actions filed relating to property where they've tried to fix various things pre-petition, and we don't know what's out there.
Okay. In other words, Mr. Clark, I guess they're looking for if you believe the lien position is A first, B second, C third, and somehow that was an error and you've initiated an action in Chancery Court of some county, that whatever pleadings you have relating to that, I guess, I mean, you don't have to produce every piece of every pleading with respect to that, as long as they can, because everybody can go out and look at the pleadings themselves. Just something to show what was initiated in each one of those, a complaint. And then they can go look at, find out what the other pleadings are. I don't expect you to produce every single pleading from every single piece of litigation you may have pending, but just something where they could go get started. Mr. Noble?
I think Mr. Clark already offered this, but could you add to that list of surveys, because the property descriptions and their flats and meets and bounds and sometimes overlap. I think that's a necessary
okay.
part of that.
That would be, I think, fair. Okay, so we've got four things. Or is that five? Five. Five different things for each piece of property. All right. All right. That, yes, sir. Whatever surveys you have. I don't expect you to go out and hire somebody to do it. If you should have a survey, for whatever reason, produce it. If you don't, you don't have a survey. Okay. So five things for each piece of property organized in that manner. Okay. What's the next broad category, Mr. Rawlings, of things?
In the broadest terms, Your Honor, everything else.
Now, if it was only that easy, Mr. Rawlings, unfortunately, that's why we're here.
I think the next area of inquiry for us would be, what are your analyses? What are your findings? What did you find? When did you find it? And what analysis have you made of the liens, claims, infirmities, what have you, as to what the Evans did?
Okay, now with that, Mr. Clark, is that in some, you know, that microphone, you can stay seated. You don't have to keep jumping up and down. If you slide that microphone over, then the people on the telephone can hear you.
Oh, thank you. First of all, that process is ongoing, the investigation. We have done some, we're doing others. I mentioned that we've obtained records from the banks, so we have them from some banks. We don't have them from others. I'm not quite sure what we mean by the title company may have an option in certain instances. I mean, if you have a property that's covered by several liens, I mean, and there's title insurance on several. I mean, it may be that the title company can, you know, pay off one and get title to the others and so forth. And I don't know that decision has been made, and certainly not in every instance, or we'd be a lot farther along with it. And that's also another question, I guess, is when are we going to have to come back and do this, you know, every month or something? Because there are going to be a lot of things that I have a feeling the answer is going to be, I don't know. We don't have that yet. We haven't completed our analysis. I'm not quite sure how you work that out. And so I guess it's a, in that sense, it may be a bit premature. I know everybody wants to get moving on this. We do too. But I really don't know that this is going to, I think they might prefer that we continue investigating rather than pull everybody off and spend time sitting in one after another of these exams. But
are the conclusions that are drawn from each investigation reduced to some sort of standard report that they keep in the ordinary course?
I'm told not.
Okay. All right. Well, okay. Obviously, that would be something that would be ongoing. So let's just put that aside for just now. That to me sounds like something you're only going to get through an examination of a representative of Mississippi Valley at some point in time. So And at that time, you could ask them with respect to each piece of property whether a report has been generated and then ask for it at that time. Let's put the final conclusions as far as Mississippi Valley Title aside for just a moment, because I see that scheduled as an examination of a representative of Valley Title somewhere after we've got all the documents made available. Okay, what else do we need? Let me start looking at your list as we're talking. All right.
Your Honor, one thing that jumps out at me is we'd all, or I would, on behalf of my two banks, would like to know what procedures they had in place as to Charles Evans, what his relationship really was, what was done internally, when was it done, what did they uncover, what should they have uncovered. That's the $8 million question.
He's going with equitable subrogation of your claims. When you come back and ask for these assignments, I believe Mr. Rawlings is suggesting that you should not be in pari passu with the banks that would somehow, they're trying to make a claim that you would have to be paid on a subordinate basis.
That's covered by the policy, Judge. If we pay off their claim, they assign it to us.
Right, and you have a claim, unfortunately, for various claimants, their claims can be rearranged in the bankruptcy court. And I'm sure that was Mr. Henderson, I don't know. Mr. Henderson, was that you?
No, it's not still here.
Okay. Mr. Phillips?
I'm with you, Judge.
Okay, I'm not quite sure what that sound was. And that would involve the administration of the estate, whether any acts or conduct by Valley that would alter whether it should be paid on the same basis.
If they are not paid in full, they're ahead of us anyway. I mean, they're first in line. I mean, I'm not sure under the policy.
Okay. Again, I'm not trying to, believe me, I'm not trying to speak for Mr. Rawlings, but I think what he's saying is, at some point down the road, and we get to the final claims allowance process, a party's conduct, pre-petition, and I guess for that matter, post-petition, could alter the position that they're paid. Okay, for example, you could be dropped down below everybody else. And I guess he's trying, you know, at some point, I don't want this to be an expensive fishing expedition, all right? But at the same time, the banks and everybody that joins in with them have the right to determine what happened and if there's anything that would color Mississippi Valley's claim.
Your Honor, may I address one issue? I had suggested to David a week or so ago that now we know where he is.
It's Henderson. I knew it.
Thank God he didn't shoot.
Is he at the zoo, I think? Go ahead.
I lost my train of thought. Let's see. I had suggested to David that he give me a list of the things that he'll produce to me, the things he won't, and the things he thinks are in the middle that might be subject to some type of privilege, which seemed like a reasonable request at the time, and I don't know that he got back to me, but we're trying to bust our way out of this paper bag with, well, we might have it, we might not, we don't know. They've been in this claims process for 4 months. They've got to know some things. And to come in here today and say we're not sure, I think is, let's say, inappropriate.
we had everything cleared up, we would be paying claims and wouldn't have this problem. Judge, what when he asked about this, what would you do? And I said, okay, Mr. Rawlings.
So that people on the phone can hear you.
Thank you. I said, okay, what do you want? I said, you know, the things in this request are totally off base. You're asking for the world. You're asking, and he said, well, look at our list. Start with it. And I said, you know, that doesn't work. I mean, the motion. I said, okay, we've got appraisals, current appraisals, and we've got the title work. And they say, well, we've already got the title work. And I know they that's the same is true for Ms. Johnson's clients. They submitted the updated title work with the claims, I believe. And so they're not interested in that. And I say, well, what else are you talking about? You know, we're not going to give you manuals and policies and so forth. I mean, if they have something, if they could be reasonably specific, this is all things relating to everything in here. And I really don't know what they are asking for.
Right. Let's do this. They're entitled to some historical information and documentation about the relationship between Mississippi Valley Title and the debtor and Charles Evans. Okay. What was the relationship? When did it begin? And they need to be, you know, they need to fill those blanks in to the extent they have. And I recommend to you reading Section 510. C of the bankruptcy code. I believe that's where Mr. Rawlings is coming from. And they want to see what this relationship was. Now, before we start producing policy manuals or anything like that, we're going to get this first wave done and see if there's any basis for a second wave that goes into things that are problematic in any case, people's policy manuals. There are certain proprietary information in those things. It's not to say they're never produced in a case, but you have to make a better showing than we have today. I'm not going to say you'll never get a Mr. Rawlings, but I'm just saying is let's go through the first wave of discovery. Let's see where these depositions go, the examinations under 2004, and these document productions to see if we need to go any further. But the historical relationship between the debtor and Charles Evans with respect to Mississippi Valley Title, they're entitled to it. Whether they'll ever be able to make a claim under Section 510C or not, you know, remains to be seen, but they at least need to get the basics under 2004. And at some point, if they feel like they have these claims, they need to start filing adversaries, and then they'll have all the discovery that they're entitled to as an adversary, but 2004 gives them a chance to have a preview. But we're not going to do extensive 2004s only to then file adversaries and start all over again. I mean, we're gonna limit the 2004s to a reasonableness standard. And if they, at that point, can make a decision, yes, they have some claim they wanna make against Mississippi Valley Title, or they don't. And if they do, fine, they can file an adversary, and then we'll go from there. But that, to me, we are not going to open up a 2004 to do everything they could do in an adversary. 2004, clearly is limited by the terms that are set forth in B, which obviously limits just how far anyone can go, and they can't go into every matter that they might raise in an adversary. So this historical relationship, what was the relationship, what sort of activities occurred back and forth, supervision, whatever it is that described that relationship, they're entitled to know what it was.
Honor, along that vein, we'd like to see what their analysis of his actions or inactions are, because they've got some internal forensic title examiners and people that are in their employ that have taken that information and prepared reports, I presume. They may not have any reports.
Your Honor, may I append to that?
Yes.
They clearly knew enough to satisfy the requirements of Rule 11 and file a lawsuit in September. So, and there has a litany of facts that are cited in that lawsuit, in their amended complaint that was filed after that, and in their affidavit that was filed in this court. So they've got something that they could provide data on.
About that historical relationship?
About any of it. Claims submitted, going back to the thing you said we were going to hold off on, that would also relate to that category.
Mr. Clark?
I think you look at the complaint and you can, I think everybody in here knows kind of what's happened with Charles Evans and Chris Evans did in terms of getting, you know, putting, selling property or getting loans on property that they didn't own and those particular entities and so forth. And I don't really know. I'm not sure exactly what she's talking about.
I guess what they're saying is you obviously had some documents that supported those allegations, correct? I mean, you had to have some documentary evidence that supported the allegations contained in those, the complaint and the amended complaint.
I think the banks, individual banks on their own claims have that. I mean, they have loans that they've given, deeds of trust to an entity that didn't own the property, for instance, and they got a loan. I'm not sure beyond that.
Well, let's say that. Okay. Mr. Rawlings' client makes a loan, and they have a loan file. All right. Charles Evans writes the title policy. And it's obviously something going back.
He didn't write the title policy. He does a certificate of title.
And then you write it. Correct. Now, your client, Mississippi Valley Title, has a file for that particular piece of property. They'd like to know what's in it. I mean, if there's some incredible smoking gun in there, they'd like to know if he wrote you a letter and said, by the way, I just want to let you know this is going to be bogus. You know, they'd like to have a copy of that letter. Now, obviously, that doesn't exist, but I'm just saying they need to know what is in your file with respect to each one of those loans. Now, at some point, Valley Title realizes something went terribly wrong, and they did an investigation. And as Ms. Johnson said, at some point they satisfied themselves that they could support those allegations contained in that complaint and the amended complaint. Well, if there's some specific documents that support those allegations that the banks would not otherwise have, either documents that were transmitted to them by either the debtor or Charles Evans, you know, they need to be able to get copies of those documents. So if with respect to each piece of property identified those five things, and then we have this complaint that says all these things about them, there's documents, in additional documents that support those allegations, they ought to be able to see those. And they ought to know something about the historical information. I think those three categories at this point should be sufficient. Okay? That's going to be our baseline, those three categories. Anything else beyond that, to me, is for either another day for you to convince me that it's necessary for it to be done in a 2004. More likely, it's more appropriate for the banks to step up and file an adversary. If they feel like they've got some claim against Valley Title, fine, sue them. And then Valley Title will have all the protections of the Federal Rules of Civil Procedure as they're incorporated in the Federal Rules of Bankruptcy Procedure, as opposed to just a 2004, which is, you know, can in certain instances be abused. So with those three categories of documents, each bank should have a sufficient idea of what's going on with their particular loans, have a sufficient idea of what Valley knew and didn't know, and they can make a determination at that point if some action should be taken against the insurance companies. Okay. Now, obviously, I don't see these document productions through 2004 going to be enough. You're going to have to examine somebody on behalf of, now would it be the same person for Valley Title and Old Republic? Is that the same? Would that be the same representative?
Sure.
Okay. So we'll probably have the same representative And when we get to the point of that you've looked at all the documents and you feel like that's necessary, okay, work out an efficient way of going through that. We're not going to, Mr. Clark, to let all 30-something banks hold a separate 2004 of those two insurance companies. That would be absurd. We'll have someone take the lead, someone ask all the basic questions. All the other banks will then have to email that person asking the questions. I want this asked. I think this is appropriate on a general sense. And then each bank will then only be able to ask questions about their specific loan, as opposed to going back, well, tell me your educational background and starting all over again. We're not going to do that. We'll waste everybody's time and a lot of money.
Judge, we probably will need, I'm trying to think about this and how it's going to work on the files. We probably need some kind of protective order in place, and we can figure out what the...
To the extent that you're giving documents about other loans?
I would think so, yes.
I guess the only time a bank should get information about other banks' loans is if they're in the chain of title together. And then they need to sign something there. No bank, if Merchants and Farmers has absolutely no interest in the Bank of Yazoo City's loans, they then shouldn't be reviewing them. I mean, I don't see, unless somebody can convince me otherwise, that seems like a ridiculous and expensive way of managing this problem. So, we can... The general information, everyone can sit and listen to, but when it comes down to each individual bank, unless you're in the chain of title, we don't need to be have that much transparency. It's not transparency for a purpose.
Judge, this is Derek. As the trustee, though, as representing the debtors' estate, I can look at each one of them, didn't I?
Oh, yeah, you're going to have to administer the claims of every one of these. As always, Derek, you're special.
Thank you.
You get to see all the loans because you're going to have to administer every one of the claims, whether it's through an assignment by Mississippi Valley, Old Republic, or a direct claim by one of the financial institutions. And obviously, all the lending institutions here know, that we have lots of rules about filing claims and personal identifiers, and you have to come on the front end and redact and do all those things. Okay, so those documents under those categories, somebody, why don't we have Mr. Clark take a crack at drafting the order on those three categories and on the first category, those five things that we mentioned. And as opposed to trying to work with Mr. Rawlings' order, that might be challenging. So let's start with a much more limited approach at this juncture. And then this is just for documents. Then down the road, how much time do you think, given what we've asked for today, how much time do you think you're going to need, obviously, to put all this together in some sort of a manageable way? How much time do you need? 30 days? Okay, 30 days. Those documents will be produced in 30 days. And then after those documents are produced, then you can come back, and in the order granting the document production, say, the parties will then attempt to agree to a time and place to examine under what categories they'll be examining a representative of Old Republic and Mississippi Valley. And we'll come up with a way that should be done, but obviously the one that we did from the debtor would be a good way to start on how we're going to actually conduct those 2004s. Okay? So documents first, then we'll do the examination of the representatives of those two companies. All right, what else? Anything else? Okay, let's see if we have anything else on the docket that slipped in. Nope, that was it. Mr. Clark, normally we get our orders in within 10 days under our local rule.
Suggestion, Your Honor.
Yes, sir.
We've got a lot of cooks in the kitchen here. Could we go over the five categories and the other two just to make sure we're all on the same page? That'd be a good idea.
Something from her.
I was going to say, we can easily get you
okay, we can get that.
A disc of today's hearing so we everybody can listen to it.
Your Honor.
Hold on a second.
One disc made for Mr. Rollins, one for
Mr. All right, we'll have those discs made. We'll send one to Mr. Clark and one to Mr. Rollins.
Your Honor, responses to the motion to sell are due on the 8th. Some of this information may impact some of the responses that the banks will be filing. Will we get an extension of time to file our responses?
When are the hearing dates?
February 19th.
I'm sorry?
February 19th is the hearing. And the response date is currently January 8th.
Well, I guess there's no chance you're going to have all this all these documents before the 19th anyway. You might have some of them, but I doubt you're not going to have the complete production because he has 30 days to produce.
February the 19th.
Oh, I'm sorry. Never mind.
Yes.
Yeah, let's
I don't
just.
Have any objection to giving an extension.
Yeah, you said January 8th and February 19th?
Yes, sir.
I can't imagine why we had such a spread to begin with. So let's move it. That's perfectly reasonable. All right, let's do this. Your responses are due how about February 9th, 10 days. I'll give you time to see the documents, prepare their responses to the motions to sell for the hearing on February 19th. Will be on February 9th. We'll give you, you'll have to add the documents by at some point, at least over a week after. I'm afraid to make it too close to the hearing day because then there are people say, well, we won't be able to analyze your response. So yeah, that's fine, Mr. McAllister. That was a good suggestion. All right, anything else that we have coming up that we can rearrange things to make it work better for everybody? All right, if not, I knew I should have hit that gavel. I was so close. I was like an inch away from the. Okay.
I guess we're. Are we talking about not just the ones that file the motion or join in the motion, but either all that have filed claims or with
well,
us or.
Well, let's think about this.
I mean, I don't. I guess I want to invite more paper and joiners.
Mm-hmm. Well, how many, in all this 2004 joinder, how many banks are not represented? It looks like just a handful, really, when you compare it to the total number of.
That's right. But, Your Honor, my response filed on behalf of my client specifically says to enable all creditors and parties in interest to participate.
Okay, well, how many different lenders are we talking about? You have the best idea.
Just 35 lenders. 35 lenders, I guess.
Okay.
Your Honor, a core set of documents, bait stamped and imaged, would, I mean, you could hand that out to anybody. So I don't know procedurally.
No, it sounds like different banks are getting different parts of the.
Yeah, in other words, for the five categories, it would be. Different with respect
maybe.
To each one.
I mean, yeah, some of the
but
things.
But two and three would be the same.
I guess what we could do, there could arguably be some bank that chooses not to participate, and I don't want you to have to go through in this order, okay? Why don't we notice the order out to all creditors and parties in interest and give them a time deadline to say whether they want to participate or not. And if they don't, then you know, they'll have to come back at some future date. This way we can know exactly who's interested in participating. It may very well be some banks that choose not to be a part of this process for whatever reason. So in the order say, let us know by, If you submit the order in 10 days, they got to produce the documents in 30. So let's do it shortly after that you produce it. Give them a couple, let's say 5 days. After, let's say if you submit the order in 10 days, I'll sign it right away. And then 5 days after that, they have to contact you and say, yes, I'm interested. How about that?
Your Honor, that's for the people who did not file joinders. Right.
Anybody. Somebody might have filed joinder and decide, you know, they don't want to play. You know, we may, well, let's do this. If we're going to have to shorten the time for you to get the order to me, just to make it fair to everybody. So let's make it, prepare the order in 7 days, and then give everybody 7 days after the order's entered to let you know whether they want to participate or not. Mr. Noble?
Administrative matter.
Yes.
I know your order jointly administering, I don't know, a bunch of these cases was entered, but there have been, I know of at least one additional debtor case, JCE Construction, in which Bank of Yazoo City is a claimant, okay. It's not presently jointly administered. So,
Mr. Henderson, would you take care of that, please?
Yeah, it's already drafted. It may actually be being filed today.
Okay, we'll go ahead and.
It's been filed since the original motion for joint administration and add them.
It'll be up to Mr. Henderson, however often this happens, to update the joint administration.
Okay, I just want to make sure that this order gets to, you know, for example, to the JCE Construction case.
Okay, Mr.
Presently, it would not.
Okay, well, let's do this. Even if the case has not been jointly administered, if it's a related case, we're going to notice out this order. So just in case there's a lag, any case that's pending that involves Mr. Evans, we will take that order that Mr. Clark is going to prepare, and we will also file it in that case and just say, this is going to be occurring. Let us know within 7 days of the date of this order whether you want to participate or not. And then we won't have somebody, you know, who's just by the fact the order didn't get in time jointly administering that case, they won't know about it. So you could have some creditors of those other debtors that are not in the jointly administered case yet not know about it. And that'd be unfortunate. And let's just get them up. Whatever cases we, Mr. Goss, you anticipate filing any more cases in the near future?
Yes, Your Honor. We just filed 10 last week, and I think there are about 12 more cases that we have to file.
Okay. Do you have a time frame on the 12 additional ones?
I'm relying on my client to give me the information you're under the file, and he gets overwhelmed.
Okay, well,
but I'm sure if the court tells me that he has to file by a certain date, and I tell him.
Yeah, I don't want this to have to be done more than once. All right. Glad I asked you that question, Mr. Goss. Thank you. Let's just think about this now. Can we get all the remaining cases filed in the next 2 weeks?
I think so, John.
Okay, we're going to start it from there. All cases that are going to be joined in this matter need to be filed within 2 weeks. All right? Then 30 days to produce after the 2-week period to get this thing all sorted out. Then we'll do 7 days after that for everybody to let you know whether they want to participate. Let's give him some more time to make sure we got all the cases that are going to be filed. Otherwise, we're going to have people who are not aware of this whole 2004 process.
How long should we give them to respond?
We're going to give them 2 weeks to file all the remaining cases. Okay? And then 30 days after that, last case is filed, you have to produce the documents. Okay. And then 7 days, you know, from the two-week period is just to get all this under one roof. And then you'll have 30 days to produce. And anybody has 7 days from notice of the order for them to say, I'm in. Does that work for everybody? No.
Logistical question, Your Honor.
Yes, ma'am.
If we wait for 2 weeks for the other cases to be filed,
correct.
The order will then be entered then?
No, he's going to get me the order now. Okay.
Can we notice it to everyone if they're not yet filed?
Well, we're going to have a lag period, obviously, of 2 weeks. And as those cases are filed, we'll give them notice that you have 7 days from notice of this to let us know. So we'll just keep moving that order into every new case. But we're going to wait this two-week period to start the 30-day production from after he knows who's in the list. Because we can't notify everybody until we have the cases filed. So that's the beginning point. We got to get the cases filed, and we have to know who's on the mailing matrix.
Your Honor, while I'm standing, since I'm doing the yo-yo, can I just ask one question? This morning, I understand that Adams and Reese submitted a proposed order on Charles Evans' 2004 examination. That has not been noticed for objections because they're typically not, but I have not had an opportunity to review that to see that it is consistent with what was done on the Chris Evans 2004 examination. If it was not, I intend to file an objection.
Okay, what I'll do is when it comes in, I will notice it out for objections.
Thank you.
Could you find the CA that has that order? Let's do it just through a notice.
Okay. All right. Everybody got the time deadlines? Mr. Goss, I know you'll be busy over the next 2 weeks, but I think that will serve everybody well. And get that order to me in 7 days. I'll go over it. Try to share it with as many people as possible before you send it over. And then as each new case is filed, we'll make sure that order goes to that mailing matrix. And so those people can then say, yes, add me to the list. All righty. Yes, Mr. Ross.
Your Honor, probably the most relevant deadline we need to set, if possible, is a deadline for Valley to pay the claims. And if we deadlines, if we could get that done.
Yeah, that, if it was just that easy. All right, anything else?
Yes.
Okay. We're adjourned for the day.